Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street, Dow Jones Industrial Average up 23 to close at 18,579. The S&P 500 Index up 4 at 2,187. NASDAQ Composite up 11 at 5,240. Yield on the 10-year Treasury down 2 basis points at 1.53%. Oil up $1.44 at $48.23 per barrel. Gold up $3.70 at $13.53.10 per ounce. U.S. stock market hit all-time highs earlier this week, despite the second quarter of 2016 being another quarter with negative earnings growth. While there are still a few more earnings announcements to be released before the quarter is closed out, it looks as if earnings were down approximately 5% from the same quarter a year ago. This will be the sixth consecutive quarter with declining earnings, not the stuff of which record-high stock prices are made. Stock market really continues to sleepwalk. The S&P 500 finished up 0.2% today at 2187, making today our 29th straight day without a 1% move. Energy stocks led the way. The Russell 2000 outperformed by a significant margin. Transports also impressed. On August 3rd, oil hit a low of $39.96 per barrel. Since then, it has gained just over 20%. Technically, a bull market in oil, although it should be noted that bull and bear markets in oil are becoming the norm. We've seen 20% plus swings in January, April, and June of this year. We've seen an oil glut push prices lower, pushing some producers out of business, shutting down rigs in the oil patch. We've heard OPEC jawbone about freezing output. When we hear about production cuts, we also hear that Saudi Arabia has increased output to an all-time high to try to gain leverage in those OPEC talks. You might be forgiven if you believe the wild swings in oil are a result of supply and demand changes, but the fundamentals haven't changed enough to justify the dramatic price changes. It seems like everyone forgot that OPEC disappointed at the June meeting when many market observers were looking for a production freeze. Traders remain encouraged by the Fed's dovish twist yesterday, which has pushed down the dollar, but at the heart of the big price moves in oil, pure speculation. It's just gambling. Still, the price of oil is approximately half what it was 2 years ago, and that is having some very real repercussions. During the second quarter earnings season, several companies that are not in the energy sector continued to mention declines in their businesses in oil-producing areas. Harley-Davidson saw a jump in the number of people in oil-heavy regions who were defaulting on loan payments. Caesars Entertainment said a lot of weakness was in the southeastern U.S. And Popeyes demonstrates that it's not only consumer spending on big-ticket items that's fallen. Seems workers in the oil patch are less likely to buy fried chicken and biscuits. Pretty good excuse, anyway. Jobless claims fell last week by 4,000 to 262,000, representing a one-month low and marking the 76th straight week that claims have been below 300,000. That hasn't happened since 1970, when the economy and the population was much smaller and Richard Nixon was president. Employment figures for Arizona for the month of July show the state lost 14,800 jobs, and the unemployment rate increased 0.2 percentage point from 5.8% in June to 6% in July, compared to the national rate at 4.9%. Still, Arizona non-farm employment grew by 3%, right at 76,100 jobs over the year in July. Meanwhile, Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia's barometer of regional manufacturing activity rebounded slightly into positive territory in August. 5 years after the housing recovery began, 5.9 million borrowers still owe more on their mortgages than their homes are worth. The negative equity rate is falling, now at 12% of all mortgaged homeowners, according to Zillow. That's down from about 14% a year ago and more than 30% at the worst of the crisis. The numbers, however, are still well above normal levels and equally spread across urban and suburban communities. Walmart got even bigger during the second quarter, as the company's revenue and earnings topped Wall Street forecast, and it reported its biggest same-store sales gain in 4 years. Walmart raised its full-year outlook in the wake of the strong results after reporting earnings of $1.07 a share in the fiscal second quarter, slightly lower than last year's $1.08 per share, but topping estimates. Revenue grew 0.5% to $120.8 billion. Cisco cutting jobs. Company announced adjusted earnings of 63 cents a share with a 2% jump in revenue to $12.6 billion. Both numbers were ahead of estimates. Additionally, Cisco said it would eliminate 5,500 jobs, about 7% of its workforce, and well below the job cuts of 14,000 that were reported yesterday. Nestlé had a distinctly average first half. The Swiss-based maker of Kit Kat candy and DiGiorno frozen pizza reported first half revenue of $45 billion and 3.5% organic growth. Net profit fell to $4.2 billion, missing estimates despite healthy sales in North America. Lenovo had a stellar first quarter. World's biggest PC maker enjoyed a 64% jump in profit from the same time a year ago, boosted by $132 million from the sale of some property in China. It's not all sunshine. Lenovo reported a 30% drop in global smartphone sales, doesn't expect its mobile division, and that includes Motorola handsets, doesn't expect a profit before October next year. Just 6 months after it emerged from Chapter 11 bankruptcy, American Apparel has hired investment bank Houlihan Lokey to explore a sale. At least 8 teen apparel retailers filed for bankruptcy this year amid fierce competition and stagnating sales, including Aeropostale, PacSun, and Wet Seal. As earnings season winds down, you may have noticed that earnings reports are almost impossible to decipher. The Securities and Exchange Commission also noticed, and they're cracking down on made-up numbers and vague language in companies' earnings filings, sending the first of what is expected to become a steady flow of letters to finance heads requesting more information for investors. The new letters also address issues regarding how metrics are defined by individual companies, as well as violations of rules about the kind of metrics allowed. The SEC updated its guidelines after becoming concerned that the proliferation of non-GAAP metrics and difficult-to-follow releases was confusing investors. Shares of private prison providers plunged in trading today following news the Department of Justice plans to end the use of such facilities. Corrections Corporation of America, the largest publicly traded prison provider, fell 50% before trading was halted. Geo Group, a Florida-based provider of corrections facilities, also tanked by as much as 40%, and trading was halted. Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates instructed officials in a memo to withdraw or not renew contracts for private prison operators when they expire. The goal is to scrap their use completely because the Justice Department found them to be less safe than those run by the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and the private prisons are not cost-effective. The move won't dislodge private prisons altogether from the American criminal justice system because they can still contract with states. Also, the Department of Homeland Security runs more than 100 immigration detention centers across the country, many of which are owned and operated by the same companies that run private prisons. 16 banks, including J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and Morgan Stanley, being sued by funds in the U.S. for allegedly manipulating a key Australian interest rate benchmark to generate hundreds of millions of dollars in illicit profits. The class action claims they sought to fix the bank bill swap rate, the local equivalent of LIBOR, which is used to price floating rate bonds and syndicated loans. The Department of Justice and the Environmental Protection Agency announced that motorcycle manufacturer Harley-Davidson has agreed to pay a $12 million civil fine after selling illegal aftermarket devices called super tuners that increased vehicles' emissions. The settlement also requires that Harley-Davidson pay $3 million in a deal with the EPA to help mitigate air pollution caused by the super tuners, buy them back from its dealers, and destroy them. Starting later this month, Uber will allow customers in downtown Pittsburgh to summon self-driving cars from their phones, crossing an important milestone that no automotive or technology company has yet achieved. Uber's Pittsburgh fleet, which will be supervised by humans in the driver's seat for the time being, consists of specially modified Volvo XC90 sport utility vehicles, outfitted with dozens of sensors that use cameras, lasers, radar, and GPS receivers. Aerospace giant Airbus is designing a flying driverless taxi that you can summon via an app on your smartphone. Airbus believes the global demand for the flying cars will run into millions of vehicles and that demand will help reduce development cost. Airbus Chief Executive Tom Enders says, "In a not-too-distant future, we'll use our smartphones to book a fully automated flying taxi that will land outside our front door without any pilot." The vertical takeoff and landing VTOL air taxi would use electric propulsion and multiple ducted propellers and would be piloted initially before transitioning to fully autonomous operations. The prototype scheduled to take flight sometime next year. Meanwhile, Airbus said it was also developing a drone-like helicopter, which could ferry multiple passengers around a city. City Airbus is slated to have a pilot on board at first, but would switch to full autonomous operations when the technology developed. The air taxi prototype in about a year, the Airbus in about 10 years. Dow Jones Industrials up 23 today at 18,579. S&P 500 up 4 at 2,187. NASDAQ Composite up 11 at 5,240. We invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio, the daily blog, eatthebankers.com, text audio and much more at eatthebankers.com.